This is Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istril and Darknotch. We'd like to thank Fantasy Flight Games for our hobby and their continued support, Drew Dallas at Card Game DB for our hosting, and the AGOT community as a whole for making this possible. Let us take you beyond the wall. So we're joined today for a chapter pack review slash bonus episode for A Dire Message, the very last of the Conquest and Defiance cycle, by someone whose agent we've had to contact multiple times to try and get him to record with us. So this is Buzz from the Tulsa meta?
Yes, that's me. I'm here.
Where might people know you from, Buzz?
I don't know. I'm kind of nobody, but I post around on the various things. I have some screen names. I'm Buzz H on the Egget Card site, OK Targ on the Card Game DB, as well as Octagon. But I've never been to any national tournaments or anything. I just play locally in Tulsa with some of the guys and, you know, text Alex and John for ideas, and they don't tell me anything, and now here we are.
First time I actually saw you play was on one of the Team Covenant streams where you were, I think, feeding your roughly one-year-old, two-year-old, while schooling someone with a barrel of black sails.
Yes, that happened. it was a I don't know. Like John, I have a ton of kids, and that puts constraints on the times that you can actually get out and play with people. So as it turned out, it was the Valor Midwest's tournament, and guys like Greg Atkinson and Will Ince were coming in from Springfield, and I had made the date on the calendar for months, and I was able to go, and then as it turns out, my wife woke up super sick, and she's like, I still want you to go, but can you take the baby? And so I did, and I did feed him while winning the – I didn't win the tournament. I got third, but I was feeding my child and winning that game.
So, all right, so a real multitasker.
I'm a poor parent. But then I can get third at tournaments like a champ. So
you were pretty excited to see two Targ decks, right, win Canadian Nationals?
Yeah, I was, actually. The Heir to the Iron Throne deck is something that we had been playing a variant of in Tulsa. Matt Phillips actually kind of built our version of it. Matt's done well at some Gen Cons and national-level tournaments, and many of us consider him our best player in Tulsa. And just abuse of the new Daenerys with the Sabia Dragons and the weapon standing stuff and man, and it's fast, isn't it? So it was a lot of fun. Great to see Philippe have success with that a few weeks ago. And it's been my dream to run Heir to the Iron Throne in Joust, but I didn't expect it to be intrigue power. That's pretty cool.
All right. So
no pressure. But,
yeah.
But at the end of this, you're going to have a snappy sign-off. So you have lots of time to think about what we're reviewing the cards, but you need to have a snappy sign-off. All right, Buzz?
I'm going to see what I can do.
All right. Well, how about for now you start us off with the first card out of this pack?
I'm actually having trouble loading it into my other device because I'm an amateur. You guys are never going to have me on again ever. So why doesn't John read it?
Sure.
And then I'll tell you if it's good or not.
It's Robert Baratheon. It's a lord. He's a king. He's four cost, four strength, both a military and a power icon. Prize two renown. He has a response. After you win a challenge in which a prize character participated, Robert Baratheon claims one power.
It's good. Here's some things that are good about it. You ready for this? Four strength is harder to burn. The three strength is very easy to melt down. So even though he lacks that noble crest, I think he's actually more survivable than Corset Robert, to whom he's oft been compared online. I don't know a single person that runs Power of Blood, but people still like pretend like they do, that noble crests matter. They don't. I like that he doesn't have to be the only king in play, but he shuts off other kings. I like that Baratheon has a suite of prize characters that are actually pretty good, and you can claim a ton of power with this guy. Prize two is a lot. He's not, like, so much better than the other Roberts that he's a slam dunk in every deck, but I like him. I think he's good.
My feelings on him is I do like him. I think that he's a card that, if you build around him, can wind up being truly insane. He claims power
if a prize character, if you win a challenge in which a prize character participates, that doesn't have to be him, doesn't even have to be your prize characters.
Yep.
If your opponent has a prize character and you win the challenge, you're still going to put that in. So you can pull them in with Marjorie Tyrell or whatever the case is. So if you build that sort of high-risk, high-reward prize deck where you're going to use the smuggler to stand things, or you might use the wall, or you might be getting all these interactions, I could see him netting you 4, 5, 6 power a turn, depending on how it all plays out. Most of the time, though, if you haven't built around him, he's not worth it.
Yeah, offense, defense, he's great that way.
My current pet deck is a Baromaester deck that uses that wall for stand and seasoned smugglers to stand all manner of things. And that Renly that was several packs back is an amazing amount of acceleration. And then you look up and Robert can claim 4, 5, 6 power a turn. In theory, I haven't been able to play with him yet, of course, but I'm pretty pumped about it.
However, I'm not very impressed with the art. I think that Iron Throne looks saggy and sad.
Well, Robert's saggy and sad, so it works.
I think that's what they did. They made the throne follow the fat Rob. I love this next card, Alex. You're so lucky.
Am I second? Normally you're second. Go ahead.
I know, but I just read. Okay. Flame and Shadow. House Baratheon only. Prize 2. Marshalling. Kneel 2 influence to choose a non-army character without attachments. Take that control of that character until end of phase. Ooh. Until the end of the challenge phase. So good. It's a marshalling event that goes on for 2 phases. It's kind of different. We don't really have something that's to the end of the challenges. We know Melisandre's schemes is amazing. This is an influence one.
Mel's favor.
Favor, right. This
is
an influence.
Schemes is amazing too, but.
Oh, so good. This can bring back a whole archetype.
You mean the one that you thought was errated into the ground? That is actually going to be amazing?
I would think so. I would think that this event alone brings it back.
I don't know. I'm looking at this, and there are a couple of things that make me hesitate compared to Mel's favor, which is amazing as well. So here, one of the advantages is that you don't have to marshal it, so you can play it after your opponent has marshaled the character, and that this can target no attachments characters, which people are starting to play more of because of Mel's favor, at least in Melee and the like.
Right.
But the drawbacks, or potential drawbacks, the fact that it's prize 2, it's not an any phase event, which means that you're not going to be able to recycle it as easily as some of those things in the other deck do.
But it's also not a response, so it can't be he called it thinking.
That's true. And then you're only keeping him until the end of challenges phase, so unlike Mel's favor, he won't help you win dominance. Combine that with the prize 2 and the fact that it's an event and can be canceled by some of those things and the other one can't, I think this is, in most cases, significantly inferior to Mel's favor.
You're such a negative Nancy, Alex.
No,
Someone's got to keep you guys down.
You got to look at the upside. 3x Mel favor, 3x Flame and Shadow, and then we're done, right?
Buzz knows what he's talking about. Plus, there's no gold. Mel's favor is a huge tempo hit, but if you're running Knights of the Hollow Hill, this is just like a freebie.
Oh, it's good in a Knights of the Hollow Hill deck. I agree entirely. But you're less likely to be able to recycle this than you are Mel's favor. So even in that deck where there's an advantage one way or the other, I would still say Mel's favor is the better of the two cards.
Fair enough. The other place where this, I think, is going to be awesome is in Melee, where it's easy to get that 2 influence, even without a dedicated Hollow Hill deck.
Mm-hmm.
And just the character stealing in Melee is out of control. It just really is.
I'm trying to say this is going to be good. I'll have to agree with Alex. Probably Mel's favor is probably a little bit better, but I love the fact that there's more influence events for Bera. Bera influence was a thing, it kind of died out. I think it's back.
But you're comparing it to one of the singular best Baratheon cards and saying it's not quite as good. That means it's pretty freaking good.
Right.
This is a solid A card.
If you wouldn't play an entire deck full of them. So there's eventually some saturation point where you go, I have enough character stealing, I need other things in the deck.
And is there enough
six
character
card
stealing?
Or 9 cards.
I don't think that's
I'm not saying we're at that point. Oh. But I'm saying that when we're comparing these, just because it's a slightly worse version of an awesome card doesn't instantly make it good.
Is there a point where there's enough character stealing? I'm not sure.
John.
How many people are running more than, 3x Enslaved is not all that common anymore.
Well, Enslaved has 2 cost limit. That's very limiting. I would run this all day to steal Non-Kneeling Danny, any of these prize characters. Just the restrictions on it are just non-army is not a big restriction. It's great. I understand what you're saying. It's not the most broken card I've ever seen, but it's.
Well, thank God for Mirror and Mirror.
Oh,
I'm going to enjoy canceling that. But no, it is a very good card. But again, not wholly impressed with the art. I don't know.
It's got fire. I like fire. All right.
I think I'm just going to got to find things to complain about. Actually, here's one where I'm going to complain about the art, but I'm not going to complain about the card at all. It's
that card is hot.
Raider from Orkwood. I'm going to complain about a lot of things, but not about the use of the card. So Raider from Orkwood, two strengths. It's monocon prized one Raider. It's the one where if he's participating in a challenge, characters with more than one icon do not count their strength. Now, the reason the art is ugly is because the art is ugly. The reason I dislike part of this card is because, again, I cannot keep track. I play Greyjoy as my favorite house, and I cannot keep track of the names now. Orkwood Raider, Orkmont Raider, Orkmont Reaver, Orkwood Breeder, next one's something, Orkmont Captain. It's terrible. And it's even worse for people translating. But the card is really very good. And basically, we've talked about these monocons regularly and which ones are better and which ones are worse. There are a lot more monocons with the military icon, things that are potentially going to be able to block this. But Greyjoy has a lot of pumps. Tech that benefits greatly, as well as the pumps, but a lot of tech that benefits off unopposed. So you're going to get the better mileage out of that offensively than you are out of basically any other house. And I'm going to put three of these in that LIV deck that we played the other week, and possibly even a King of the Isles after putting this in, because I think it's just so good.
Yeah, the Raider is a very solid trait to have on it. I mean, these are good. There's not much more to say about them. I think that the Martell one I've seen used in the most interesting and varied ways because of the icon manipulation helps that one out. This one's very good. Very good.
All right. So, Buzz, can you read the next one? Or?
Yeah, it is an Orkwood Captain. It's an Ironborn Captain, Greyjoy character, 3 cost, 3 strength, prized 1. Response, after you win a challenge in which Orkwood Captain participated as an attacker, kneel all locations controlled by the defending player. Naval icon, naval power. Are you satisfied with this, or are you going to complain that it's maybe not quite as good as your very favorite Greyjoy 3-costs?
Have I stooped so low as to be that predictable?
I don't know.
Let me, I thought
I might troll you as much as possible.
The 3 gold slot in Greyjoy is just so tight. That's how Alex is going to say.
Greyjoy.
They already have a ton of naval they don't need anymore.
No. That's a little harsh. I just have to take up the contrary position, obviously. That's all I do. Having naval icons on, or naval enhancements on 2 icons is very, very good. It gives you a flexibility that very few characters have. It's one of the reasons that Asha is so good for those Black Sails decks, the ones with the tricon with all the naval enhancements. And the ability's kind of neat. But in this cycle, I would probably prefer the Enraged Crewman in most cases.
Oh, geez, you did want that another?
That's what I'm wondering.
You figured it out.
Two positive traits. The prize one doesn't worry me a ton. If you really need to stop it, you can probably save it in Greyjoy. The response is icing on the cake. It's not likely to make a huge difference. I mean, kneeling out the Lannisport Brothel is fun. Kneeling out Meraxes is useful. Don't jump him in against you, because he'll kneel out all your stuff. But, I mean, you're not going to be playing him for that response, I think.
I think I'll have to be honest, Alex. He wouldn't fit in a lot of my Black Sails decks. I'd probably put something else. So, he's okay.
Maybe you guys can remind me. Longship Grief, does it let captains not kneel in the first challenge? Or just
yes.
Raid?
Correct, but that won't include the naval enhancement.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
But that's helpful for, because the captain trait is one of these so-called positive traits.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, like Lord. Oh, that's a positive trait, but it doesn't actually get you anything. I'm trying to figure out what captain might give it. Obviously, Ironborn's really solid with Finger Dance if you wanted to do that. I mean, it's a good card. Like you say.
It is a good card. I think that in the Black Sails build, I'm likely to edge it out for the Enraged Crewman, even though he doesn't have the same spread on the naval encounters.
Yeah, or maybe a one of this, because if you're trying to recur LIV, say LIV2 that is, with Wex, the prized one, you can pull this back if you have your LIV in play or something like that.
Now, I do like his response to fuel potentially Captain of the Iron Fleet, where you can discard kneeling locations, so there is some synergy there. But I don't think it's something that you build your deck around.
I mean, shuts off Westeros Bleeds if anyone ever played that anymore.
That's true. I wasn't thinking of
influence.
Kneel influence, yeah.
Influence is so July.
All right, John. Give us this next one.
10 Towers. It's unique. It's 3-cost location. It's a stronghold. As a response, after you win an unopposed challenge, kneel 10 towers, discard X cards from the top of the losing player's deck. X the amount of strength by which you won the challenge. We're totally going to HOD this, right? Like, just mill people down?
It seems, once you print a 3-cost unique location, that's pretty much the only consideration. You're only ever going to run it as an HOD.
I mean, if there's just some way you could win by milling.
Well, there.
Oh, you know, by Valoring when they have no cards to draw? That would be a good thing.
The mill in general, I mean, we've discussed it in the past. The reason I like this card is not necessarily because of its power level, but because at least the mill is interactive. So it's not play a card and mill 10 cards off his deck or something like that, which is a lot less interactive. This keys off the challenge phase, keys off winning these challenges, and doing so by overcommitting. So I think at least even if a mill gets pushed to a point where it's competitive, it's still interacting with the challenges phase here. Honestly, I don't think. I mean, I think this speeds up mill decks, but I still doesn't think that makes them win.
A naval escort with one intimidate guy could get some serious cards milled.
Yeah, but
mill 20.
You have to mill something like 35, 40 cards in three.
You'd
turns.
Have to do it twice,
and then, so you can with 10 towers and some other mill tech, and then you still need to be able to win with what you have left, and this may make it feasible. But I don't think it's a shoe-in.
No.
I mean, it's pretty easy to win when somebody's deck is empty, right?
Depends how much of your deck you've wasted to effects that now no longer do anything because you're just milling.
I guess I don't really like this card because aside from being a troll, I am just really grumpy. But, like, being milled is awful. Like, it's just not any fun. And I know that there's the whole NPE discussion, but you can't do anything about it. And then I would never build a mill deck because I can't take the tempo to play a 3-cost unique location that does actually nothing unless I'm already kicking their butt. I don't want that in my deck. But when my opponent somehow magically makes it work, I just want to punch them in the face.
Well, keep in mind that, I mean, being milled may be a negative play experience, but any card milled off your deck, so long as it's not your last card, actually doesn't change the game at all.
No, yeah.
I mean, there are people who, they see their Rob go to the discard pile and go, damn, I would have drawn that. But it was just likely for it to be anywhere else in the deck.
We can't live in that fantasy land. I'm totally with you, Alex. But I can remember Greg Atkinson's Baser Maristan mill loop deck that he ran at Regionals last year. And he milled, like, this was in the TLV era. He would mill TLV decks out. And then it just sucked.
Yeah, but it also didn't win the tournament.
No, I beat him. JK. LOL, at mill. But yeah, I mean, mill's in a weird spot, because if mill's too good, then it's no fun for anybody. But unless mill's too good, nobody will ever play mill. And these cards are just kind of slowly making it a terrible experience for all of us.
I do think this is only an HOD location, and then you wind up building your deck around it. It's a gimmick. It doesn't really help your board at all until the point where you've milled out his entire deck. At which point you have a slight advantage, a strong advantage. But I think I think it's going to be very hard to build a competitive deck out of this.
Yeah, I would agree. It's just a deck that hacks people off.
I like the next card.
I do. So I get this one. So this is a version of Sir Balan Swan. He's a Lanny Shadows card, so House Lanny only. He's S0, 2-cost, or 2 strengths, military intrigue. Shadow's Crest, obviously. No attachments, Kingsguard, Knight. I'm all over the place on this card, reading it in random orders. But a response after he comes out of Shadows, each opponent with 4 or more cards in his hand chooses and discards a card from his or her hand. So the reason I really like this is the S0, which is phenomenal, especially as more and more people are playing King's Law. This is the kind of card that you can reliably play and not be worried about that. It has synergy with all the existing Kingsguard. It has an intrigue icon on a Shadow's Crest, so it has synergy with Kingdom of Shadows. So really, all of that, regardless of the response, which is generally fairly minor, but will net you a card and interact with Podrick Payne or Marbrand Outriders or any of those other things that you're going to use. But independent of the response, he's still rock solid.
I like him. Like, even just the single discard is good. It's card advantage, and card advantage is good. If he drew a card, he'd be good, but discarding a card is just as good.
Well, it's discarding a card that the opponent can choose, so it's not as good.
As good, right. But it's still card advantage. And like you said, it has all those little triggers. And Lanny's getting more and more stuff that triggers off of when a card's discarded, like those dogs. So I think he's great that way. And Lanny seems to be getting a lot of King's card. When Jamie comes out of Shadows, you know, it won't be far-fetched for Lannister to have three King's cards soon. He'll be running Knights, Lanny Knights.
It's also worth noting that when this guy comes out of Shadows, because he's at zero, you can do it in much, much earlier phases. So you can potentially pull him out of Shadows in draw and get one of those cards, if his five cards is saved from the last rule by decree or something like that, just after he draw. He redrew in the next phase. Or you can, like I said, combine it with Podrick Payne or Marbrand Outriders to start that pressure early within the first, one of the early phases before marshalling. So I like him a lot.
Yeah, I'm a fan. I mean, I ran House of Dreams Dragon Pit a while back, and obviously he can't go in that, but it taught me the value of Shadow Zero. And Zalo, everybody plays Zalo, and that really wrecks Shadows decks because you save your gold and then they take it. But the S0, as you say, can come out with flexibility. And I really value flexibility in my cards. I want a card that I can bring out any phase, any time, a lot of different situations. Also, the art on this one is actually really nice.
I was going to make a comment about that. Not only that, but whoever drew this actually read the books, because Balance One wins an archery competition or comes second and loses to Angie the Archer or someone like that.
I think it was specifically Robin Hood he lost to. Is it Robin Hood that he lost to in the archery competition?
Yes, it was Robin Hood.
This is Alexander Dench, who drew, I think, a lot of the new iterations of the Shadows Kingsguard. They're all very nice. Do I get to read the next one?
You do.
I dedicate this card to Aaron Glazer. It's Wheels Within Wheels, House Lannister only, prize 2. Any phase, kneel a unique Lannister character to choose and reveal a new plot card. Any phase, get punched in the face by your opponent for playing this broken card that should be immediately banned. Oh, wait, that second part's not on there. Just the really good plot card.
That's the quote at the bottom. It's okay, you can read that.
Yeah, flavor text.
Because it's fair to roll into Fear of Winter after you've marshaled.
Totally fine.
Hey, no, it doesn't even have to be a restricted card. It can be blockade after you've marshaled.
You can roll into Valor after your opponent marshals.
Yeah.
I know, which is fun as well.
Hey, even with city plots or rivers, the acceleration of your cycle is enough to justify playing this card, even if you don't have one of those perfect situations.
How about manning the city walls in the challenges phase, just up to claim 2 and drop in a House Clegane Brigands they weren't expecting? I mean, that's just 30 seconds of thinking of stuff.
Rule by decree, some phase other than plot phase. I mean, it's the any phase that really pushes this.
Yeah, it would be strong if it was a plot effect.
It's like draw 3 cards and then rule right away, so your opponent has to discard down to 4. Okay.
Yeah, 3 plot counting. Oh. Sorry, I'm just getting a headache because this card is ridiculous.
Now, because the people's counter-arguments are things like, oh, well, it's House Lannister only, which doesn't help me much. Nearly unique Lannister character, like Penny, Tommen, not really that huge a burden. It is, you won't always have a unique Lanny on the board. But
yeah, I guess I like effects that push characters. Yeah. So kind of like Game of Sivas, rewards character-based Martell decks. But it's just not a heavy cost, is it?
No.
It just means everyone has to run, 3 Harrenhal.
Or 3 Royal Favor, or whatever it was called, Royal Decree?
Yep.
Or whatever. Paper Shield. Yeah, Paper Shield, at least. Because it's just too devastating to your board position. Any of those, mid-marshalling or mid-challenge phase shenanigans can completely turn the game around to the point where you really have no chance of recovering. Why waste my Fear of Winter when I see that he has Forgotten Plans? That's another thing. I'm probably going to play Forgotten Plans in a lot more decks just to make sure your plot text is blank if you flip it in a phase other than plot.
Yeah, so people can't just, push Snow Winter after I've marshaled all my little dudes.
Yeah, exactly. It buys me one turn where you can't use Wheels Within Wheels effectively. And then hopefully I've drawn into Cancel by then. I mean, the fact that it can be canceled is not justification.
No, I was just going to say, that's like people that complain about milling is people that say, you can paper shield it.
I have to run 3 bad cards just because you get to run three good ones.
Three good ones, yeah.
And if I draw my bad ones, they do nothing to the board state. Well, if you draw your good ones and I don't draw my bad ones, I lose the game. This card is just, yeah.
Yeah. So this is a small segue, but I really like Prized as a mechanic. And I think you were talking about it a while ago, Alex, that it changes the valuation of power challenges. It has rebalanced the game in many ways. I really like it. But I feel like the Prized has not been properly allocated among a few of the cards. And this is one that I feel like could have easily been Prized 3 or even 4.
4, yeah.
Whereas Counterplot, which is a Prized 3, is probably worth a prize one. Like a prize Danny, people would run that if it were prize three, and that Martell Cancel guy is prize two, and he's barely worth prized at all. So I don't know. I also do not like people that complain about designers and should have seen this and that, and playtesters are stupid. I don't think that's helpful, but, man, this card is just too good for its power level and its cost.
This one amazes me that it got to this point. I know that they're very, very unlikely to restrict it before it comes out.
Happened before.
Happened before with Laughing Storm. There was a lot of pushback against that. Eventually took it off. It wasn't that big a problem. I think that this one will be defining the season from Gen Con, when this card is out, until the pre-Worlds FAQ, where it's going to get restricted.
Yeah. So I remember seeing
And fine, okay. Play with your Wheels Within Wheels for 2 months. Or not even... Yeah, I guess 2 months. And we'll survive that. But just don't expect to build a world deck with this card in it.
Yeah, I guess I like that the designers are willing to take a few risks and push the envelope in some cards, even if we feel like they color outside the lines, rather than opening up a pack of really bland cards or coasters, you know. So in that sense, I'm fine with it. In another sense, Lannister has not been doing great on a nationwide level, through the regional season at least. And maybe the designers felt like they needed a boost. You know, kind of like you see Barragut things like Mel's Favor, which are a little bit over the curve.
There is a margin on a little bit over and
Wheels Within Wheels.
Well, I don't know.
I'm grasping at straws here. Yeah. Let's just move on before I punch myself in the face.
All right, John?
The Boneway. Drone. Location. 2 gold. House Martell. Which is awesome, because it's House Martell. After an opponent plays or reveals a prize card, each player chooses up to 3 characters he or she controls. All characters not chosen are returned to the owner's hands. Ooh.
What do you mean, ooh? This is a coaster. This goes in the binder. This never gets play. This is a terrible card.
Shh, Alex. Look at the art. Ooh. It's pretty. I'm never going to play it, but you were... absolutely right about the poster.
Oh, this is... it's terrible.
I'm done. All right.
Just for those who don't believe us, the reason this is awful is because it requires your opponent to do something. No matter how powerful the effect is, even if the effect was win the game, that just meant your opponent can't play prize cards. And I'm probably still not going to play a 2 gold unique location for my opponent can't play prize cards.
But the next card is take control of your opponent's hand and play any one card.
The ultimate combo. So
with that event, it's perfect.
Garbage. Let's go on to the next event, which has very nice art. This is Locked in a Cell.
Wait, let me make the art sound. Ooh.
Ah, the art sound. This is House Martell only, prize 2. Any phase, kneel 3 influences. Influences, yes. Kneel 3 influence or kneel a noble character. To choose a character without a crest, return that character to its owner's hand. Now, this may surprise you guys, but I actually really like this one. If you think of how powerful Savas is and how quickly new players look at Savas and aren't quite sure that it's that good, they look at it on the restricted list and aren't sure why it's there. If you faced it, you are sure why it's there. The fact that this is an any phase bounce has tremendous synergy with all sorts of neat things you can do. After someone has challenged and has only put one character in the challenge, and then you bounce back to make the challenge fizzle, or it's their defender, or it's pre-plot because you need to do that. I mean, you can return one of your own characters to avoid a valor if you need to, including the character you just knelt, the noble character. Oh, no,
he
has to have no crest. But there's also some synergy with Blood Orange Grove and things like that. Is it worth the price, too? Given the fact that it has a pretty steep cost to play, I suspect not. But given how powerful Savas is and how deceptive it is at first, I'm glad they erred in that direction, and I think this will actually see play.
Yeah, I like Martell Challenge Control. I think it's fun. It's very good. You can kneel your noble character, bounce stuff before Valor, and then cycle into what's the one where kneeling characters can't be killed?
Like Resolve, yeah.
Yeah, you, stuff like that. You know, this is the type of card I think that makes a like a friendly Bloodthirst deck really fun, where you're bouncing stuff and doing things like that.
Yeah. I think a bunch of people will play with three of for a bit, and then they'll start to realize that probably one or two of is the right number.
I think the price, too, will hurt. Those Martell decks that tend to stall can't really give you that much power, and so I think that will be the damning bit. I don't think the kneeling influence or the noble character is enough of a cost in and of itself, though, because I think this would be another Savas.
Yeah, something that hurts this card, too, I think, is the fact that Harrenhal is so ubiquitous that it's very hard to run Gaston Grey for other mid-challenge bounce, because you just get your Gaston canceled and you've sucked up a noble for no effect. If you could run this with Gaston, I think it would be really strong, because you have the nobles anyway and the bounce kind of effects anyway. So I think it could be good. I remember when You Murdered Her Children came out. I played with that for a long time. I loved it. And then I realized it's not even as good as Red Vengeance, you know. And I think this will kind of see that same fate, like you're saying. We'll play with it, and then we'll bring it back to a one-of. Be happy when we drop. But and it'd also be great in, like, a Dark Wings, Dark Words, if you're already using influence effects. But good, not great, but fun.
And this can see some recursion. Can Seneschal Ricasso recur? No, it only recurs characters.
Characters, yeah.
But there is some interaction with prized for things like the attachment that lets you look at the top five cards of your deck and some other synergy. So, I don't know.
Well, that's my secret tech in my Bera Maester's prized, because you pale steal that puppy in and then just get cards. That's John's kind of deck, man, I'll tell you what.
I love my Shaggy decks make me go a little bit crazy. I might be playing Shag at Gen Con.
I'd expect nothing less.
Yeah.
All right, Buzz, give us the next one.
All right, this is a Northern Clansman. Two cost, two strength, Stark character, non-unique, Bannerman trait, Clansman trait, military power icons. If you control a Baratheon character, Northern Clansman gains renown. If you control a Lannister character, Northern Clansman gains stealth.
Yay. Sorry.
Yeah, it's just not good. These guys, you know what would be sweet? And I thought this about all these dual house guys, is it seems like they were made specifically for draft.
I agree.
These guys would be amazing in draft. But in constructed, they're just not that great unless it's kind of an established, like, conquest type build. Like the Barrelani conquest can get renowned pretty reliably. But Barra Stark or Lanny Stark conquest isn't good. Stark does have a few, like, Barra Stark, or at least they have Brienne, but you're not going to run this guy just to get renowned with Brienne. He'll run, like, two costs that's actually good.
Yeah.
So draft, in theory, would be awesome, and in constructed, coaster. Sorry, buddy.
I think that's probably fair. I mean, a two-cost renown is really good, but he doesn't have renown. You have to work for it. And, you know, he's got an icon spread that Stark has a ton of.
Yeah, and then the Bannerman trait is another one of these allegedly positive traits that's not actually positive, because he buffs your Moor's Umber, but that's not a good effect. So.
Well, he'll also, if you're running the Barra or the Lanny ones, he'll buff your, I can't remember what they're called, Axel, no.
Now you're just scraping the barrel.
Okay, scraping the bottom of the barrel. All right, John, next Stark card.
Oh, yeah. Blackwood Elite, House Tully Army, 3 cost for a 6 strength, prize 2, no attachments, deadly, and renown, and has some lame text about it having to be chosen for military claim if able. Wow. This thing is gross. Like, this will see play.
This will see play.
This will see play. This is a very strong card.
It has 4 keywords. at least one negative one. One middling, no attachments, can be quite positive at times. And then deadly and renown on top of that. Oh, thank
six
God it doesn't have a crest.
For 3 gold, I mean, this fits great in Siege. This just fits great in normal Stark. Yeah, it gets hit by Northline Keep, but this is a very good card.
Alex, are you going to tell us which 3-cost Stark character this isn't quite as good as and will not quite make your decks?
Well, somewhat. I mean, you're not going to replace Mira, Edner, Lewin, Daemon, Arya for it. They're all better at 3 cost. But, you know, pretty sure this is the three-cost character that makes the cut in my deck.
Yeah, I would completely agree. It's okay. Really good, isn't it?
And so good, Alex is going to play it.
Three more strength and cost. You know other cards that have three more strength and cost? The fleets, if you can guarantee playing them. Again, the armies that get reduced, if you can guarantee reducing them. Distinguished Bosuns. I mean, these are all awesome cards when you can play them for those cheap costs. This is
and the
just,
fleets only have one keyword. This guy's got deadly and renowned.
Yeah. Just an interesting point, because the rules question that came up with this is, if you have two of these in play, or if you have this and a card that's been dragon-feared, so you have multiple targets that you have to choose for military claim if able. And going back to a question I asked ages ago when K-Tom answered, if you have multiple dragon fears or multiple characters that have to be chosen for claim, this isn't actually a conflict the first player resolves. You have to choose one of them for claim, and then if you still have claim, because claim is chosen sequentially, you'd have to choose the next one for claim and so on. So if you take a claim one challenge, you can get rid of one Blackwood Elite. You don't magically have to get rid of both or get rid of none because you can't resolve the situation.
But I guess I don't understand why the first player wouldn't resolve the conflict there.
I don't actually understand it either, but this is the word of K-Tom that we can dispute at a later date. This is directly from rulings about having two dragon fears.
I'd be interested to look at that. Yeah. One time I disputed K-Tom and I was wrong, and we're not going back down that road.
But one time you disputed K-Tom and you were right?
That actually did happen.
It did?
And why do you, you come happen. On our show and you make it a show of lies?
It did not happen, guys.
Okay.
I'm just trying to keep it fun, John. Just trying to keep it fun.
That said, this card isn't that interesting from a mechanical standpoint in that you're not going to build specifically around it or not. You're going to use this card. And
yeah, it's just a big beat stick with keywords. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And it's Tully. Who's giving Tully, like, how's Tully more stuff?
It actually also has nice art. Honestly, this is weird.
Good art, good card, good traits. Uh-oh.
Okay, so I get to read this card. We don't actually have a ton to say about this card because we reviewed it at great length with the person who designed it. So this is the Mad King Aerys. It's a Targaryen card. It's 4 costs, 4 strength, intrigue power, prized 1 renown, lord and king. He cannot be killed unless your opponent controls a noble character or Sir Jaime Lannister. I love that bit. He has a noble crest himself and dominance. You can kneel him to choose and kill a noble character. What would I add to what we'd said last time of some of the fun shenanigans of dropping in rich lands in a keep, some of the neat things, the fact that it's important to note that, he has renown and 4 strength and not using him in a challenge just so you can use his ability isn't necessarily great, but Hakarp health and stuff can help. I don't know. What I'd add would be that he would slot very nicely into our Cannot Be Killed dragon deck.
Yeah, I was just going to say, two decks have come out since that day, one of which was your melee deck that can't be killed, and the other of which was the joust-winning deck, which wants intrigue, power, and renown. And this is, albeit 4 cost, is steep, but very good in the Targ-Air deck. Very good. Okay.
And it
lots
triggers
of
the cow attachment as well.
Yeah, which helps.
Very good.
I think he'll see a lot of play, but I think he's a really interesting design. So
well balanced.
He's not super broken, and I think at 4 cost, I mean, yeah.
He's no Danny, right?
No, well, Danny's 3 cost, and that's a big jump down to 3, you know? Like, it really is.
Danny's broken.
Yeah, I know. It's like comparing things to Mel's favor.
or Mira.
Also, the art is really good on this one. Again, it was a credit where credit's due. but I do want to take another moment, if you haven't listened to the episode where we had John Bruno on to talk about the inspiration behind the design, the reason behind the design, the process of making this card, and some of his deck ideas. Go back and listen to that. I think that was great, and I really want to thank John Bruno for coming onto a show and spoiling this card. He definitely didn't have to do that, but that was his way to share it with the community, and I love doing it.
Yeah, it was a really great experience. It's always great to talk with John Bruno.
All right, you get another exciting one, Buzz.
Oh, man, I'm super pumped. Dragon Ambassador. 2 cost, 2 strength Targaryen cards. It's a bannerman. Military and power icons. If you control a Greyjoy character, Dragon Ambassador gains deadly. If you control a Martell character, Dragon Ambassador gains an intrigue icon.
Doesn't even have another trait for us to comment on.
It's
a bannerman.
And then the flavor text doesn't fit it either, which admittedly is a minor complaint. But it doesn't fit the art, at least. I will never run this card. Probably not even in a conquest deck with either of those houses.
Yeah.
It's just poor. I mean, because, like, if you look at the Martell one you guys are running in your melee deck, it gains immune to plot effects, which is amazing. And then in the same deck, this one just becomes a Tricon. And that's not awful, but you can do better for 2 gold, for sure.
Yep, it's a draft card.
I like this one, by sword or by guile. It's an event. After you win a military or an entry challenge as the attacker, cancel the claim effect of that challenge. Then move up to 3 power from the losing opponent's house card to your house card. Limit once per phase. This card is going to be amazing in Melee, but it's a good power grab card anyways. Imagine that air deck with this event where it could do an entry challenge and then swoop in for another 3 power. And this is much better than the bigger power grab events that just get you 3 power, because it's a bigger swing. It's really a 6 power swing because you're taking that power from your opponent.
I wouldn't strictly say better, because it's worth noting that this cannot generate power from nothing. So sometimes those rush techs that are really pushing turn 1 and 2, you have no power on your house. You want to play that make an example, get the other 3 power, and win, or the superior claim. Or, you know, people aren't really playing those much in Joust anymore. The advantage to those was it didn't depend on putting power on your opponent's house. However, with prized and with all these things, a 6-power swing is enormous. I think this is very neat. I think it's also worth noting that you can do this on a claim 0 turn. You Valor your opponent, you say, okay, I'll do this military challenge that, you know, they don't care. And suddenly they've just lost 3 power and you've gained 3 power.
Yep.
Thankfully, it's limit 1 per phase. Otherwise, this could be just, oh, damn.
I like the arrow through the bird on the art. It's good.
That's it. Do you guys think it'll see a lot of play in Joust?
Some. There are some decks that will want this. I mean, even in like a burn deck, often you can have trouble closing. It's difficult to give an event slot to a closing that you might rather have to burn. But like in a summer aggro deck, maybe. Even in a Dothraki deck, maybe. Certainly that air power grabbing deck would like one or two of these. In Melee, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, we're going to see a lot of it in Melee. We're going to see the odd deck run it in Joust. To me, this is a more of a Melee card, but we will see a little bit of Joust play.
I think
it won't fit in many decks.
I think the problem is that this doesn't help you win the challenge. It doesn't change board position in any other way. It just swings the power totals. So you still need to be able to defend that power or close the game at that point or maybe be ahead. And so I think, yeah, Melee and then very select target decks in Joust. This next card, I'm rarely so excited about a card. So they told us previously that there was going to be an Iron Throne in this pack, in the spoiler from FFG, and they said there was going to be an Iron Throne. And I think pretty much everyone assumed it was going to be a Targ version of the Iron Throne. I saw that bumping around as the rumor, the go-to rumor. This is a 2-cost neutral Iron Throne with the Westeros trait. It's prize 2, and the Iron Throne cannot stand during the standing phase or by other card effects. If you are the only player to control the Iron Throne, players cannot trigger response effects while the Iron Throne is standing. After a player wins a challenge, that player may choose to stand or kneel the Iron Throne. So just to explain this, essentially, while this is standing, no one can trigger responses. If somebody wins a challenge, they can choose whether to stand it or kneel it. So they have control over whether players get to trigger responses at all. Now, I've often talked about decks or the idea of, say, a bearer deck that tries to shut down a whole bunch of triggers. There's, like, the Snowden card. There's the Little and Less. There's Bitter Bridge. You know, eventually you could make a deck that doesn't depend on trigger effects. This would be the kind of card that slots into it. But the reason I like this card so much is because I can really envision the entire board state being about fighting for the Iron Throne. Even in a melee game, like I could imagine a melee game where you start with this in the middle of the board and nobody owns it, and essentially you try to win a challenge so that you can trigger some of your effects. And other people are trying to deny you that challenge because they don't want you to trigger your responses. And so this sort of idea of fighting for control of the Iron Throne, even if you're the one who played this card, just excites me. I really, really like the idea. Caveat, you have to be the one to play it, to spend two goals, to risk the two prize, and all you're doing is essentially allowing people to fight over this opportunity to cancel responses. So is it that good? Mm-hmm. Maybe not. Is it
protects cool? you from Neil completely, right? You play that, and
yeah.
Lannister cries on the other side of the board till the challenge phase. Mm-hmm. And there's other effects.
If you can leave it kneeling by really controlling a phase, and your opponent's going to Valor and count on their saves, nice try.
Yep, I'll keep that up.
So I think that this, it'll completely change the game when it hits the board. The order you do your challenges has to change a little bit because you may say that I need to be able to play this card. To be fair, you win a challenge, you get the passive for this to go off, and then you can trigger your responses off that challenge. So it doesn't necessarily do it that way. But you need to make sure that, for instance, the last challenge you have enough to win. So that you can control whether they're standing for next marshalling phase or not. So it'll really change who you want to go first. It'll change how you play out your challenges. I mean, what a cool card. What inspired design.
Yep. Yeah, very interesting.
This card's like your BFF, Alex.
Yeah, I know. It's not even that phenomenal a card. Like I said, it's a two-cost unique location. It's not that easy to play. It's not that easy to play around. I just really like what it tries to do.
This is kind of like, to me, like whatever that Greyjoy mill card I was complaining about was, is that it's just very frustrating to be against, and it's like the type of card that you would never put into a deck, because like you're saying, that two gold tempo swing is hard to stomach, and you're not even guaranteed that you'll get an effect from it. But it is cool, and the picture is pretty. And it's neutral, which means I can shut down the Lannister Iron Throne out of whatever house I want, if that's still a thing.
Next one is Buzz.
Sure. This is Cell Sail Galley. One cost, neutral location, worship trait, prize one. After you win a challenge by four or more total strength, kneel Cell Sail Galley to search your deck or discard pile for a character with a naval enhancement, reveal it, and add it to your hand. Then shuffle your deck if it was searched. It's trying to build some tension there with the pin. Perhaps it would be good, but it's not good. Because this then is just reiterating rules already, and that kind of puts me on cards for no reason. But it's okay. Like, discard pile recursion is a great way of card advantage. It's neutral and it's cheap, which is good on setup and stuff. But it doesn't do anything to change the board state or help you win that challenge.
Keep
sales decks going. Like, this would be great in a Baratheon Black Sails, or even a Greyjoy one, to help mitigate entry challenge loss.
But, I mean, you could just search
for
the naval character, which is good. And on top of that, the warship, so that it synergizes with all of the warship tech in Greyjoy. If you're running, Longship Main Bane or Naval Escort as you're restricted.
I think it's a good choice for a card design. I think it's harder to trigger than you might expect. Because you still have to win by four or more. It's pretty transparent what you're trying to do. It's card advantage, which, these decks can be desperate for. But you don't get to search through your holds. So if you're looking for something specific, that might not be as great. It kind of doubles down on Black Sails. Overcommitting to challenges, you get more card advantage. And that's fine. I don't really object to that. But I think that most of the time you'll wind up cutting this. You'll have put two copies in your deck, and then you'll realize that there's something better.
Yeah, you can win by four or more on defense a decent amount at times, which, I don't know. You're right. It's not good. Whatever. I'm not going to lie to the listeners and say that it is.
I'm not making a call on it yet. I want to play with it before I make that decision. I want to throw it in the Black Sails deck and use it a few times. Yeah.
I suspect it'll make first cut, or it'll make the first cut and then get cut after tweaking on the second or third cut in most of these decks. But that's probably the right point for a card to be. If I'm slightly wrong, then it'll make the cut more often. Slightly, if I'm right, it'll still make some decks.
Yeah, this reminds me of that Greyjoy event that does something to search for navals that's terrible.
Except it's terrible, yeah.
And I don't feel like you want to be reminding me of that event if you're a location.
At least this is repeatable.
Yeah.
Unlike John, I don't like to test cards. I like to just say what they are definitively. And I probably build this card.
All right. What do we have next? I read Iron Throne. John.
They lay with lions. It's a plot, 4 gold, 2 initiative, 1 claim, prized 1. When revealed, choose and kneel a non-prized character. I don't like prized 1 for this. If this wasn't prized 1, I still wouldn't put it in my plot deck, probably.
Yes, you would.
I don't know.
I think you
would. A single kneel?
This okay, let me ask you this, Alan. The city.
Here,
the
I have
city
a
kneels more than one.
I have a secret for you guys. Are you ready for this? Yeah. I don't own all of the Thrones chapter packs. Not even close. One of the ones I don't have is whatever one has City of Sin in it, the Neil City plot. So I don't really play cities a lot. Again, that's a dirty secret. Don't tell anybody. I have never, ever seen a person play City of Lies to Neil one character.
Yep. Me neither.
Never, ever is, again, it's an exaggeration. That's how I speak, is in hyperbole only. But I'm with John. Like, 4 gold is not bad, but prize 1 for this, and also the restriction of non-prized, is not great. If you could kneel a prize, any character, okay, fine. You know, Danny control, Red Viper control is things we're looking for in every deck we make. But not Danny control in a plot slot? I don't know.
Oh,
however, I will build a deck with this and test it, because that's what I do with every card.
There are a couple of things I like about this card, and I like being on the upside. I like the art. I like the fact that it's...
Wait. Ooh, the art is good.
I like the fact that it references something in the book, you know, a whole bunch of people being hanged from trees because they supposedly were...
They lay with lions. Yeah, very evocative of that scene and that feel. But the effect is not, however.
But the effect somewhat is, because it affects these non-prize characters. Nobody important, nobody you were really knowing about was getting accused like this. This is the commoners that are getting thrown to the wolves, possibly, literally. I don't know. I also think that this is probably the kind of card that you would include in a deck running the Mander, potentially, for the additional card. I think you guys have probably...
That's niche, but actually that's not terrible, because it fits that theme anyway, with extra draw for prized.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you've already created a bad deck. Why not throw more bad cards in?
Hey.
That's what... Yes! Now you guys are speaking my language.
I don't know. I think that a plot that does something that allows you to kneel a character is... already something that's not that bad, that you don't need to commit your plot deck to it. Do I think this is phenomenal? No. Do I think it has a place in plot decks? Yes.
There might be an odd person, but they're just making a bad choice. They could have put a better plot.
Yeah, I feel like for the prized one, it could have had another extra oomph on it.
Yeah, if it was like 7 initiative,
yeah,
5 gold.
Even 4. Yeah, I think it could use a little more initiative. If it was
4-5 initiative, then I'd 4-5-1. It might see play.
If it was an 8-8-2, I would play this card.
Oh my god, if it was 8-8-2 and said prize 2, no text, and just had a picture of a little pig, I'd play it.
But only because of the picture of the little pig. Honestly.
Absolutely, it wouldn't be the 8-8-2.
Alright, I guess we can do these next 3.
Together?
All together. So these are essentially 3 versions of the same. I mean, technically. I guess it's only because of the card text limits that they couldn't print them all in the same card. They're all 3-5-1s. One's called A Task in the East. Is it my turn to read?
Yeah, go ahead.
A Task in the East, A Task for the King, and the Turncloak's Task. And each of them says, you know, if you have a certain house card, you get to look for another card from another house. So if you have Targ, you get to look for your deck for a Martell card. If you have Martell, you get to see a Greyjoy. If you have a Lani, you get to see a Barra. If you have a Barra, you get to see a Stark. And what is it? If you have a Stark, you get to see a Lani. And if you have a Greyjoy, you get to see a Targ.
Put that card in your hand.
And put that card in your hand. Shuffle your deck.
Yeah, so search effects are strong. We all know that. But these are very limiting, and I obviously haven't spent hours and hours looking at all of the combinations. The only one that I can see anything jumping out at me is the Lannister searching for Barra cards for maybe a dual house Tyrell. It's not awful. Barra searching for Stark. You can get Brienne of Tarth, which is nice. You can get potentially a C. If you're like Targ, you can search for a Martell C. And that's the third best thing I thought of, and that's not very good.
Yeah, so. Makes it a 5-5-1, kind of. At the cost of, you know, not doing anything, basically.
Yeah,
I mean, any of these could search for, like, a city of the Shadow location, because it has all the affiliations, right?
Or Jack and Hagar.
Or a Bay of Ice.
Or a Bay of Ice, yep.
But again, hey, that's not...
Now I can run one Bay of Ice and just search for it turn one.
Yes. Yeah, most, part of the reason you're running Bay of Ice is because of the nice setups. You're hoping to find it anyway.
Yeah.
I know, this is Hollow Hill Bay of Ice deck running this turn one.
I strongly suspect we'll see this card in a future draft selection as well, to allow you to play with these cards, just like they're doing with the Bannermen and promoting that kind of splashing. Aside from that, it really looks like you want to dig around for a specific combo. If you want to get Dani, I guess you can get her, the new Dani, if you're running a Greyjoy house card. I don't know if there's a lot of synergy there.
I almost wish, Alex, it would say something like that, like search your deck for a card that does not match your house affiliation or neutral and add it to your hand or something like that, to let you do some search for some weird niche out-of-house things with a little more flexibility, because these just are too restrictive.
They're pretty restrictive. Maybe it's a good thing that they are.
Well, that's true.
If you just search for an out-of-house, I think that would be a very, very powerful card.
Yes.
But it also wouldn't let you get Jacken, which is very sad.
Or the Bay of Ice.
Or the Bay of Ice, that's right. It wouldn't be
good. I think a good measure of a card's strength is how quickly the podcast host evolved to telling jokes about the card, and on these it was about 38 seconds. So.
That's true.
And that was for all three of them.
Actually, so on average, even less. I think you might have a combo where you go, this is the card I need to go get to make this combo work. I don't know, maybe you're running Lanny, City of Shadows, and you want to go get the Queen of Thorns to finish the game off or something.
Yeah, or your Black Sylph. That's not awful. Yeah. You know, another thing about these cards that, like, cards like this, rather, that's kind of cool is as the card pool grows and expands, the enterprising deck builder can look back and remember and find a new card just released that fits this theme, you know? And I kind of like that. Mm-hmm. That these are not good now, but it just takes one card to change that, you know? And that's kind of fun.
And that'll just be things. Demolished Chips. If they announce rotation, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, geez, yeah.
All right. Also, the art on them isn't that good, so that's the definitive factor. All three of them have middling to poor art.
Task for the King is the best, and then the others are bad.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the chapter pack. So we are ready for your snappy sign-off, Richard.
John always calls me Richard because that's what my online names are, but everybody else calls me Buzz, so I feel like I'm in trouble. This is like not a snappy sign-off, but I don't really know how to do it otherwise. Thanks for listening, guys. Check out TeamCovenant.com. I want to shout out to the Tulsa meta, especially Keith, my playtest partner, and just the guys that make Thrones such an awesome game to be in. Thanks, Alex and John, for having me on. It's been a fun time. Sorry I was late. And then you spell million, M-I-L-L-I-O-N, for my check. And then I'll see you guys next week.
That's a good thing John's dyslexic.
Yeah, there's no way I'm spelling that right.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.